I spread a song so you can sing along with my special guest star
two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast by chance explores musicals for you. Theme song, yeah.
Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song's Second Chance Theater, where we recover a topic but with a new guest. I'm your host, John, and with me today is the king of Second Chance Theater episodes, Tyler Henry! Woo!
Hi, that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The king of Second Chance episodes. That applies to my life.
Oh. And we're here today to talk about the classic film, Labyrinth. From what year? Hold on. What year? What did you come out?
1986. Yeah.
Originally, it was previously, it was episode number 172 with guest Jason Kerr. And yeah, we're here to talk more about this. So prior to us recording, though, you were saying that this was you've seen this movie oodles of times. Would you put this like right next to Grease 2?
No, I wouldn't. I do love this movie. It's not something I watch a lot, and I probably wouldn't even put it really in my favorite films of all time. So I sound like I really love this. No, but it is important because this is how I first saw and first heard about David Bowie. So it changed my life.
David Bowie and his crotch, yes.
Oh yeah, and then watching that in 4K again last night, it gets bigger and bigger. It's like, yeah. Anyway, you cannot talk about this movie without talking about the bulge, David Bowie's bulge.
Of course not.
And the fact, so I think that explains a lot for me growing up. But yeah, I was gonna say the first memories I have of this, it had to be at least 1997 or. Because I was with my dad, and so my parents were already split up, and Disney Channel was playing it when they used to play like really good movies, and we got to the middle of it, and so I was like, okay, there's all these Muppets, and I didn't know who David Bowie was. I don't think my dad recognized that was him. I didn't know if it was a woman, if it was a man. I guess I didn't see the bulge, or maybe Disney blurred it out, you know. So anyway, and it really freaked me out. I think I specifically remember the fiery scene. And so I'm like 7.
Oh.
So when that lead fiery, like, you know, pulled his eyeballs out and then did all that, that was a lot for me. So, but I somehow I always knew it was Labyrinth, right? Okay, so we fast forward a few years. I'm about 10 or 11. Again, it's another weekend where Dad has me. I don't know what the... So it was, we were at Blockbuster. I see the video and I'm like, the video cover, and I'm like, okay, you know, that was really weird, but something made me want to rent it and watch it. And I did. I just watched it by myself and I really loved it. I think I was about 10. And I remember even like, then I watched it and I came out and I was like, Dad, who's David Bowie? And then, you know, it's like, that's how like the English people say his name. But like my dad, he was like, oh, he's a rock singer. He's kind of weird. I was like, oh, okay. So I got kind of obsessive, as I tend to do, even from an early age. And I was obsessed with it, and I get on these Labyrinth fan sites. Well, those generally tended to be parts of David Bowie fan sites. So then, and this was in the golden age of Napster. And so I found Bowie through that. And then the obsession was born. So, yeah.
So,
there you go. Well, people listening can't see the tattoos I just showed my Aladdin Sane lightning bolt and then the black star. But yeah, so there you go.
The first chance of this episode came out 3 years ago, and I think that was the last time I watched this movie. So part of me, I don't know if I guess I like rewrote history in my head because I thought, I remember, you know, we talked a lot about his crotch and everything, but I was thinking like he had like an actual cod piece on the outside of it, and
now
watching this, I was like,
that's Clockwork Orange. Yeah.
And this one I'm like, oh no, he's just wearing Capizio tights and then has like an aubergine stuffed underneath there or something.
I think that's all him.
Oh my God.
If
80s
you see
kids
the man
movies
who
are
fell to,
wild.
if you see the man who fell to earth near the end, there's very quick flashes, and those are all, that's all him. And
I haven't seen
I'm
that
saying you just
movie in forever.
compare and contrast. Yeah,
Oh, well,
but it's him.
and I'm surprised that no one from Henson, I don't think Disney owned them at this point. So like no one was just like, this is a kid's movie. Let's give him a dance belt or
I need to rewatch it. The special features. There was a new Blu-ray that came out. Well, it would have been 2016, so that would have been
9 years ago.
yeah, I'm trying to think of the anniversary for that would have been. No, that would have been the 30th anniversary. And they had a and Bowie had already had passed away, of course, beginning in January of that year. But Brian Froud, the conceptual designer who created all the goblins, and that he's Toby's father. He there's like a really brief mention in there. I think you can find it on YouTube. It's just that where they say they did get in trouble for the size of David Bowie's bulge.
Well,
But obviously not too much trouble, but yeah.
and like the nature of this movie, I'm like, this is a kid's movie? Like, just,
This is the 80s.
I
Yeah.
know, it was cocaine and nobody cared. Like, they
No,
had to
80s
have.
kids were tougher. They really were tougher. Because you think about this. This traumatized me less, but after I had tried to watch Return to Oz, which came out the year before this. So
Which.
these family, which had a lot of Jim Henson, yeah, puppetry in there.
Which this rewatch of this, I saw a lot of like the similarities between this and The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah,
Like I
definitely.
like
I mean,
it's human girl, three companion friends going on a quest. Is it real? Is it not real?
that makes, and that for me personally makes a lot of sense when I think about the obsession and how my very, so growing up and then very, like toddler size, I was so obsessed with The Wizard of Oz. Okay, so it's almost like this kind of graduated to the middle ground, but it was very shortly after this that I found the Rocky Horror Picture Show, much to my parents' dismay, because I was like 11 and 12. I don't blame them. I mean, I shouldn't have been into it, but Rocky Horror has very Wizard of Oz concepts as well. I mean, with Brad and Janet, and they even had toyed with the whole black and white opening, for a while, and then going to color. And so I think for me personally, that makes a lot of sense of as far as obsessions go. And but really, this was the gateway to me for Bowie.
Did you get a chance
And
to listen to the First Chance episode of this that we did?
I
We
was listening to it right before I was trying to log on here. Yeah, it was really interesting. Yeah.
So I was pulling crap out of my ass in that episode, but I was just like, no,
As I will be here.
as I always do, but I was just like, no, I do see that theme that I picked up on of like, hold on to your youth,
Yeah.
but I feel like unlike other films of potentially this caliber or other child, kid films, I feel like Jennifer Connelly doesn't feel like she is too much of an adult. I think throughout
Right.
this journey, she's learning to be selfless and think of others.
Yeah.
Because when we first meet her, like in the beginning, I still don't know if she's auditioning or if she's practicing for like a
I never
project.
thought, oh, I just thought she was always just playing. I mean, that's whatever that little book is, which I think is probably just some little novel or whatever. I mean, she is just playing the part. I guess for me, and it was like, especially one of my, me and a couple of my cousins, like on both sides, were like really into this movie when I got into it. But I mean, we would do the same thing with our favorite types of movies and stories. And I would like, and then it got to where then I had a video camera and I tried to make my cousin, see, I'm an only child, so my cousins, I tried to make them the actors and I tried to be the director, which never went well. So I for some reason it felt like rewatching it last night for me, I, for the first time in ages, kind of felt more of an indication that maybe this is all a dream. To me, I
Oh,
guess I,
100%.
yeah, I think I used to kind of just take it that, oh, she really went there. I'm like, no, I mean, and I, things are easier to see in the 4K for sure. So I think it is a dream. It's not as overt as, you know, Judy Garland getting hit with a window, and we see that in The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
But you see David Bowie, and I think that's her mother in the clippings. It's because he's there's a novelization of this that came out, and I think he's like the stepdad, and
No,
so
it's
because it's
she's the stepmom, like the woman
well, but the
that
woman in
Jennifer
the
Connelly bitches out is
yeah,
the
no, but I'm
stepmother.
talking about the clippings on her mirror,
That's
and then the
her real
scrapbook.
mom.
That's her mom. There's also a photo I noticed on her nightstand. That's her and her mom because she's got the dark hair. She looks like it.
Oh,
But he's, yeah.
I don't think I picked up on that. I just thought that they were like clippings
Yeah.
from a magazine or something. You know,
No.
unless
Well,
maybe
the
her
reason I'm
mom
saying
was an
that,
actor.
yeah, I think that's what it was saying. And I think that's part of why she has all those posters on her wall. We see Lacage Cats, you see Patti LuPone's Evita. I think 42nd Street 2 is on it. But like, and also I think, and I, this would be impossible probably to find at least cheaply. I think that, you know, there was novelizations at least in the 80s of every major movie that
100%,
came out.
yeah.
And these were never, these scenes were never filmed, but I think that kind of expands on the fact that it's either her, I don't know if her mom has married this guy and it was going to be David Bowie, but it's, and I'm glad they got rid of it. But see, part of this, Jennifer Connelly was 14 when they started filming. She was 15 by the time it ended. And like you said on the previous, the first chance of this, she's supposed to be 16. So that's the
Yeah.
whole, that is why I think me and then a lot of my girlfriends who, you know, my age, they say, a lot of them say this was their sexual awakening, was seeing David Bowie in this.
Oh, 100%,
Mine
yeah.
too.
I could see that.
Yeah, I think because I was entering puberty as well, and I was like, "What the hell is that?" And then seeing, then getting into his music, and then watching the Ziggy Stardust movie, and seeing that full androgyny, and think I was confused in the best way. I was confused, but at the same time, not. It just seemed right to me. But anyway, that's a whole other thing that we won't get into.
The man who came to Earth was
Yeah.
before this, yes?
Yeah, The Man Who Fell to Earth was 10
Fell on
years.
Earth,
It
yeah.
was released 10 years before this. It was released in 76. He filmed that in 75.
Okay.
So he had a huge coke
So,
problem then, but yeah.
I'm glad that you're a David Bowie expert because what?
There's a lot of things that need to be corrected from your last episode, I have to say.
Well, because I knew he
I'm
had
sorry.
the Ziggy Stardust character.
Yeah,
Or
and the
what?
lightning
What?
bolt was not Ziggy Stardust, it was Aladdin Sane, which was right after.
And is that what era we're in right now in Labyrinth? Or are
No,
we?
not at all. So Ziggy Stardust was 72. That's when the album
Okay.
came out. Aladdin Sane is basically Ziggy, but with a lightning bolt. So that was the album in 73
That's
that carried
Aladdin
over
Sane.
into.
I'm so sorry for Bowie
Oh, it's
fans.
lots of people get that. His next alter ego, and see, nothing was as ever stuck as much as Ziggy did, because but that's why he killed off Ziggy. I think it was July 3rd, 1973, just because that was, he was getting lost in it. I mean, it was, I mean, and so
So
Halloween Jack was, yeah,
when he filmed Man Who Fell to Earth, it was Aladdin Sane
no,
era. No. Oh.
let me continue on.
Okay,
All
sorry, sorry.
right, so 70, we get to 74. That's Halloween Jack. Again, basically Ziggy, but with an eye patch. So that was for the Diamond Dogs album. He got into his soul period in, you know, with 75 with Young Americans, that album. 76. So, well, he started filming. So between 75 to 76 is what we call a Thin White Duke. And then that's when he was filming Man Who Fell to Earth. Then he moved to Berlin to try to get over his drug problem with Iggy Pop. Had no alter egos. It was just David Bowie. So then when he did a tour later on in 78, like that's what he said. It was no characters, it's just him. So we get to the 80s. This is kind of the end of the characters, but at the same time, with the massive unexpected hit of Let's Dance in 83, He kind of became a character. He was mainstream all of a sudden with that bleach blonde hair, but he looked at least healthier again than he had. So this is in his mainstream era. Let's Dance was a big hit. The next album, Tonight, was definitely not. It's by his own admission, that's one of his worst albums ever. So this is kind of in the interim. His really not his greatest creative period, in my opinion. So these songs, there's a couple of these songs I do really love. The others, and as you mentioned in the previous episode, some like especially Magic Dance, I think he wrote songs and they're like, great, okay. And they don't really, I think he wrote Chili Down. Maybe that was more specifically for this. And of course, he doesn't sing on the actual album version, but there is a demo version with him that came out shortly after he died
Of
that.
Chili Down, of him singing that, you say?
And that's when it was called Wild Things. Yeah, it may still be on YouTube. If not, I can still send it to you because it lots of video and audio came out right after he died. I was grabbing everything because I was like, oh, okay, because then this is somebody's gonna say like, oh no, he never
Oh,
wanted this
yeah.
out. I think it was the choreographer, the guy whose name I can't remember who choreographed this, but he posted that. And I grabbed it from YouTube and just tagged it on my Labyrinth album in iTunes. So Bowie was just Bowie. So alter egos were done, but it was mainstream 80s Bowie. And yeah.
I mean, I feel like Jareth, one could make an argument that what is a character because this is so iconic. Not saying that it's like an actual one of his performative
Well,
characters,
yeah.
but because, like, you know, if you were to do like the timeline of his characters, I feel like
Right.
we would have to incorporate Jareth the Goblin King because he's such an icon, and like you said, a sexual awakening for a lot of people.
Definitely. But at the same time, this same year, I think this one was after this, but I mean, it was the same year was Absolute Beginners that he was in. He did the title track for, and he was in it. I've never seen it all the way through because I've tried to watch it before and that was just not for me. I've seen the Bowie parts. And he had done the year before, he had done the theme with the Pat Metheny group for The Falcon and the Snowman. And then I think on the very end of this year, 1986, he did the theme for When the Wind Blows. It was an animated movie. So actually, I kind of consider this his soundtrack era because that was, and those songs, I think. I've done like playlists before for his album Tonight where I got rid of a lot of what was on that and I've put some Labyrinth songs and some of these other because a lot of those soundtrack songs were a lot better than like the actual studio albums that he was doing. That's my opinion. A lot of other people have that opinion too though.
So,
So
you know how, like, I know you're a fan of the Muppets, right? Or of Henson
Oh yeah.
Corporation and all that.
Yeah, I'm
So
not an
you,
expert by any means, but yeah,
well,
definitely.
you, have you heard of like the or seen that meme around of like Michael Caine treated the Muppets like they were fellow actors, and Tim Curry was a Muppet himself, so that's why like the two of them worked well in their movies.
Oh
I feel
yeah.
like Bowie is the same in this one. Like somewhere in the
He's a
middle
little
between
bit
the
of
two of
both,
them.
isn't he? Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
where
So he needs to be in there, yeah, in that meme.
well, they're not, these are not Muppets per se. These are
Well, okay, yeah, I guess you're right.
totally different creatures. But like with him, it like it's so funny that there's a choreographer listed in Magic Dance. You're watching it and you're like, he's basically like doing white drunk uncle dances at weddings, you
You
know?
can see a little bit of that in I haven't watched it in ages, but they had that original like feature length documentary that's been on every release, the Inside the Labyrinth. Charles, what's his name? I feel like he did some stuff with Sesame Street
So
too, but yeah,
there's
but I know what you mean.
two choreographers listed. I'm seeing,
The
where's
lady did As the World Falls Down, and she because she ended up in Star Trek somehow, because I actually went. My one of my best friends is a, she's a she loves this she loves Bowie, she's a huge Trekkie as well, and so she met that woman whose name I you have
So
it,
one of them is Charles Augens. I'm
So
seeing,
he was, yeah, he was Magic Dance.
and then there's Michael Moschen.
Well, there's
And
supposed to be a
that's
lady as well that she did the As the World Falls Down. But anyway, but yeah, like I was saying, like my friend that who's a huge Trekkie, she went to a convention and it was like a Star Trek thing, but she asked her about working with David Bowie and she was like, "You know that?" And she's like, "Yeah." Because we went to, it was a couple months ago, the last time before I watched this last night, that I'd watched this in a very long time. It was a tour that was going across the country. There was like a 7 or 8 piece band that was doing a live score. So we went to the
wow.
Tennessee Performing Arts Center. Yeah, we were up in the balcony. They had a huge screen. They had an introduction filmed by Brian Henson, who's Hoggle's voice and most of his mouth movements in this. They had subtitles, and I so they had the track was of the movie. I mean, they just took out all the music, but it had David Bowie's vocals and everything else. And you had this like 8-piece band, so with three keyboards, drums, everything, and these young people. And I guess they had iPads. I don't know how they kept to the rhythm, and they did the entire, even the entire score. So it wasn't just the songs. And I was just amazed, and it really made me, I think, appreciate the music more than I ever had before, just to hear it live. And so that was pretty amazing.
Sorry, I was scrolling through my notes for a second. There's another moment that I also picked up on that was very Wizard of Oz, and that is in the beginning with the stepmother and their dog. Felt like
Yeah,
Miss
I've never thought about
Gulch.
that, but yeah.
Well, yeah,
In a way, yeah.
and then like when we go to Sarah's room, they pan across all the things that like we're about to see. That like there's that one labyrinth style game where you have to like I don't remember the name of it, but like I know you have to like turn
I
like
had one
this
that was just called
board
Labyrinth.
games. Yeah, you do also see a book of the Wizard of Oz in there.
That's
So
very prominent, and it comes up later too with the junk lady when she's piling all the stuff on Sarah. So, I mean, I think that's very intentional.
part of me is now wondering, I don't think this is a full-blown like I went to sleep and I'm dreaming dream. I think this might be like playing pretend, you know, like we've all done it and still do it sometimes. Where, you know, where we imagine things, and I think she's like still in the house just playing around and ignoring Toby crying. Like
Oh, totally.
in reality, I think that's actually what's happening. And like at the end, when she's dancing with all the creatures that we came across, like I still think she's stuck in that like play world.
I think, well, to me, it is about, I mean, it's like, what would they call it? Coming of age. So she, it's showing her, and she is, I mean, she's obviously very childish at the beginning. I mean, a lot, which, I mean, that's the point. So I was going to say a lot of her dialogue and whininess at the beginning, but that is the point, that she's still a child. So she's still fully in her imagination, and then we do see her, and I think it's kind of this, I like I said, I can't really talk too much about the subplots that didn't make it past it. I've read about it on the internet with somebody who had a copy of the novelization where David Bowie was playing also her biological mother's lover and all that. And then it was kind of maybe this attraction she had to him. I don't think it ever suggested that he was like trying to take advantage of Sarah. I hope not. But I think it was just kind of her dealing with a, you know, feeling attraction and going through that. But like we see her, I think that there's a link to that because you do see her like taking off those scrapbook or those newspaper clippings of him and putting them away. And, you know, she's, you know, the whole should you need us? And then she says, I do need you. Oh, you do, you know, from time to time for no reason at all. I need you. So I think it's the kind of, that's the point is like, yes, we have to kind of grow up. We have to have our feet a little bit more, you know, on the ground, but we don't need to completely lose the imagination. And like, I think like you were talking about in the first chance, the fun that we can have, you know, so there's a healthy, I guess it's all about a healthy balance and to be selfless, to give let Toby finally have Lancelot the bear, you know, because, you know,
But what happened
I'm
to
like,
the
it's a
dog at the
bear. Yeah,
end?
I guess
What
he's still in
happened?
the garage. He's asleep in the garage. He's Merlin. He's fine. Yeah.
I do.
And it was Sir Didymus's dog, so Ambrosius and Merlin, yeah.
Which, okay. So that's what it makes me think that she's not asleep and
Right.
she's just pretending in this magical world, because not once does she call out, "Oh, hey, you're the statue in my room," or like, "Oh, hey, that's my dog." You know, I
Yeah.
think she's playing. Also, I totally forgot about this whole movie, like everything that happens for the most part, because when Sir Didymus
Yeah.
showed up, I like cheered again. I was like, "I forgot about you, you little
Yeah.
fox." Which I think he's a
People
fox.
love him or hate him. Oh, I've always thought he was a fox, and because I thought it was kind of funny, so that's why he's riding a
Riding our
dog.
dog, which
So
we
it's
did talk
again, it's kind
about
of
that
flipped.
in the first chance. And while listening to it, I was like, why didn't I point out that it's a fox riding a dog? Like,
Yeah, because it's like the tables have turned, and you see a little plush Sir Didymus in her room. I mean, at the beginning, so everything, pretty much everybody we meet and everything you see in her room, and it's luckily now that it's on 4K, it's a lot easier to kind of grab those things. Yeah.
So, have you seen about the sequel that may or may
Oh
not
God, they've been
happen?
talking about that. They've been talking about that for years and years and years. And how can you
Cause,
do a sequel to this? Yeah, I mean, there's no reason for it.
right, because I'm watching, I keep seeing it. I'm like, it's a complete package. Granted, we could say that about a lot of other things that have gotten sequels recently, but
Yeah.
this is one that I'm just like, I understand you want the cash grab of it all, and we're in a nostalgic time right now, but
Yeah,
like,
but
what would it be? You know, unless you're gonna
yeah,
do
I
a
don't think
Return
it's a
to
good
Oz
idea.
version of Labyrinth.
But see, Return to Oz worked because they had 13 other books to, you know,
Well,
base that
there.
on and pull from the second and third. This is not, I mean, this was an original concept. This wasn't based on any previous book or anything. And without David Bowie, I mean, I've seen that too, whisperings of like some, you know, but and then Jennifer Connelly, I just, there's no reason for it, you know. This is kind of a one and done to me,
Right. I mean,
or it should be. And I don't think you need any extra. Yeah.
I mean, if anything, just create a new movie. Like, this isn't, obviously, this isn't the
Yeah.
first time this style of movie has happened, because we've been talking about Wizard of Oz and everything.
Yeah, other
And
references, yeah.
it's still Wizard, that style is still being referenced to this day. So I feel like, why call it
Yeah.
Labyrinth, first of all? Or Labyrinth
Yeah, I mean,
2.
it could be anything. Yeah, I mean, you could be use inspiration from it. I mean, because let's be honest, everything has already been done before.
I know, right? There's.
And so any new movie, you know, and hopefully people are going to say it's derivative anyway because everything's kind of been done before. Use it as like basis of inspiration or whatever, but it's like my whole theory that Grease 2 would have been so much more well received had they just not referenced. I mean, people would have been saying, "Oh, this is similar," but they wouldn't have been expecting something that's not going to be there.
Yeah.
You know, just like Shock Treatment is
Is
not
the
a sequel to
equal.
Rocky Horror. I wouldn't even say that. I love Shock Treatment dearly, but it's, you know, it's a completely different beast. I think it stands on its own.
I mean, if you were
So
to,
that's my thing. Yeah.
well, to go with Shock Treatment with Labyrinth, if you were to do something similar to that, where like you have the character Sarah or Toby like go on another adventure. Where like to equate it from Rocky Horror to Shock Treatment, if you were to do Labyrinth to Labyrinth 2, where you have the characters go on another journey, but it's not the same. The only way you can call it a sequel is because you're using similar character names.
Right.
So like if Toby
Probably, I mean,
were to like go on an adventure, but like not a similar
but
one.
how interesting would that be? I mean, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm Maybe I'm being a little more closed-minded about this whole concept of a sequel, but I don't understand. I don't know. I guess it's something that I really would not be interested in.
Oh yeah,
So,
no.
but I don't,
No, in this day and
I'm not
age of like
thinking of.
reboots and remakes, like don't even bother, just make something different.
I mean, this is such kind of a comfort movie for me too. Like, I mean, I have put it on, like, if I'm like homesick or whatever, for some reason, like 80s fantasy films are like a comfort for me. Even like ones that can be kind of nightmarish, like this and Return to Oz and Adventures of Baron Munchausen, which are my favorite, But yeah, I don't see the need for a sequel. I'm trying to remember, they may have had like a book or like a graphic novel or something. But of course, you can do that because David Bowie doesn't,
Oh, are you
he
talking
doesn't,
about, Return to Labyrinth, the English language manga from
That
1980,
must be it, yeah.
based off of this movie, where if you look at the
Which I
cover,
never, I
you
mean, I'm not a huge.
when you look at the cover, you see the manga anime version of Jareth.
Yeah. But you can do that because it's a graphic novel. That's fine. I mean, it's just he, when you don't have David Bowie, and it would be
Right.
weird even if he was here, because he'd be so old.
Right. I
And
mean,
Jennifer Connelly's way too old to even be. So I don't. There's no reason. They make it, for me. I mean, that's the kind of the core of the movie.
even in this
So I don't
movie,
really know.
Jareth has like slightly pedophilic vibes to him.
Yeah, I mean, David Bowie was 39 when this came out. I mean,
Right, but I'm not
so I
saying
mean, he
like
would have been
it.
40 in the next week. Yeah.
I'm not. I don't want to blame Bowie himself because he's playing a character.
No. No, it's the character.
Yeah,
So that's
so
what I'm
that's why I'm.
saying. I think it was this. I've got to look it up, and I obviously didn't do a lot of good research before we started this. But like I said, there is. I think it's in the novelization some sort of subplot. I don't. I thought it was more of like her kind of infatuation, or finally starting to notice. Which, if your mom's dating David Bowie, yeah, you probably. I'd be conflicted. So I mean, that makes sense. But I know what you mean, and I think even he, Bowie himself, was kind of like very in doing this, like, okay, she's 14. And so I think he was very careful, especially, which they're just dancing. I mean, that's really not, they're ballroom dancing. But I think he was a little like iffy on, okay, is he trying, he's trying to seduce her, but maybe that's part of it. Maybe it is just I well obviously the main reason is trying to stop her, distract her, so he can get another goblin from an turn another baby into a goblin.
Is that what he wants to do?
Yeah.
I didn't pick up on that, nor
Yeah,
did I
because
hear.
he's well, she says that in the very beginning. So she's created this whole story, right? So Toby's crying, she's trying to get him to stop, and she's being a real bitch about it in my mind. She's like, okay, you want a story, So that's when she said, but she knew the king of the goblins would keep the baby in his castle forever and ever and ever and turn it into a goblin. And that's there's a whole sort of fan theory. Every single goblin that's in that castle was once a child that some big sister wanted him to come take away.
So Jareth
There's
is
also a
like
fan theory that every girl was named Sarah.
interesting.
But every girl fought for her brother and got him. Yeah.
So Jareth is like an evil Peter Pan goblin man.
I would say, yeah, I guess that's probably a better way to describe it. Yeah.
Because
Now that's a
like,
fan theory, but she says that, so that makes sense,
right,
and
and I think I picked up
yeah.
on the whole she's have it's her imagination during that moment where you see all the goblins like wake up and just say it, say it, say the
Yeah.
phrase, the wrong phrase, not the right phrase, you know, like
Did she say it? Yeah. So
I think a lot of those moments are supposed to be her imagining it.
yeah. Yeah. It's her story that she's created. She's created the world, but in her world, every goblin there is a child that he's taken away.
That's
And
interesting.
that the I well, I guess the sisters didn't get there in time because they turned into goblins.
So then what
So,
happened?
yeah.
What would happen if she didn't get there in time? Like, what would happen to her? Would
Oh,
she
he
be
turned
sent
into a
back?
well, what happened to her?
Or are those,
Or maybe she becomes a goblin. I don't
or are
know.
those
I think that
people
might
in
be
the
part of it.
court, like in
Well,
that ballroom scene?
the people that you see in the ballroom scene are the goblins, but they're just getting to play humans for that. Now that's what they've talked about. I know the conceptual, like Brian Froud, I think you see him, he's the one with the mustache that you see. Those are the goblins. But just for this hallucination, they get to play, people till she smashes the bubble, and then she's falling. So there's really a lot of layers to this, and there's a lot of things that are open to interpretation, but there's a lot of things too you've like really got to pay attention to from the get-go.
I didn't
And
do
so had I
that.
not watched this millions of times already, I'd probably be like, oh, but it's just it's really interesting. And that it's kind of like choose your own adventure. They leave it up to you to, for your own interpretation, some of it. But some of it is kind of hidden there, but it's explicitly stated too.
So then in the beginning, is that owl real? The barn owl that is throughout, that is, I guess, supposed to be Jareth.
Yeah, it's supposed to be him. Now that one, I don't know if I really have an answer for that one. Well, that's why I've always, I guess when I was like 11 watching this and just taking it on the surface, I was like, oh, that's Jareth watching her. And especially because you see the owl at the very end fly off, when you see everybody
Right.
else in her bedroom. But then when it's 13 o'clock and then, you see that he dissolves into all that, the drapes or whatever his costume, and then it's an owl. I don't know. Or maybe the owl is like wisdom and kind of with, or not wisdom, but the coming of age, knowledge,
Well,
acquiring knowledge. I don't know. I'm really stretching on this one.
I wasn't
But,
sure though if like the owl in the beginning is real, but then she's influenced by it to use it in her fantasy, like she uses with the dog and all the
yeah,
other pieces.
probably. I don't know. I think that's with the owl specifically is probably definitely left up for interpretation. But there is a so there's but there's obviously a connection between him and Jareth. But if also Jareth in real life is her mother's lover, that she, I don't know. Maybe I didn't prep enough for this
Well,
mentally,
this is
but
most.
it just it raises a lot of questions. Yeah.
And then I'm looking at my notes because I wrote down there's a gun in this world, like when she's in the
Oh
labyrinthy world. But that
yeah.
could also be another reference to Wizard of Oz, where when they go to Keamako Castle to hunt down the witch, you see that, is it the
Scarecrow's got a
Scarecrow
pistol,
has
yeah.
a pistol? Like, so.
Yeah, the lion's got a butterfly net, and I think the
The
Tin
Tin Man
Man's
has
got
his
like
axe.
witch atomizer. Well, in addition to his axe, but
Yeah.
and the Scarecrow's got the gun,
The
yeah.
gun. Wait, where I feel like they were using. I'm gonna just say, like, I think they were using a lot of Easter eggs and references to Wizard of Oz in this
Oh
for,
yeah.
like, the details and everything. And, like,
Yeah, definitely.
I equated that Hoggle is the Scarecrow, Ludo is the Lion, and Sir Didymus is the Tin Man. Would you agree on that? Just based off of their personalities and everything.
Based on the personalities, yeah. Well, no, it because yeah, Hoggle is the coward. Because at first I was thinking,
See, I was thinking
well,
Ludo was
no,
more
or either.
cowardly than Hoggle.
I think at the same time too, it's kind of like a conglomeration. Those three and those qualities that we associate with Scarecrow, Tin Man, and Lion and Wizard of Oz, I think these three are probably kind of a mishmash of those. I think Sir Didymus, in a way, is not as brave as he pretends to be, which is very much like the Lion, but we know Hoggle's very cowardly. And then Ludo has that too. I think also Hoggle, it's the heart. He kind of comes or being him being becoming selfless himself
Right,
in
and
addition
but
to
like also
Sarah.
Sir Didymus has the heart to like, but at the end being like, if you need us and all that.
Yeah. And then yeah, I think Ludo I love Ludo, but maybe the brains, and then Sir Didymus the brains as well. And Hoggle a little bit too. So really if you look at it, it's probably like kind of a mixture of all of those qualities
I think I
for
like that
these
more so
three.
than my one-to-one analogy.
But I just can't look at one and say, oh, you have this, where you need a heart. You know what I mean? Because if you think about them in this movie, they all kind of express needing those. And again, it's where a young female character lead can't continue her journey till she helps these guys. It's not quite as much as that here, but Wizard of Oz is definitely like, okay, this young woman, she can't continue her story arc until helping these three guys that can't help themselves, and they've had everything they need all along. But I think it does show you that they've had everything they need all along in Labyrinth. Definitely less explicitly, but it's there, you know.
And this, okay, so
Yeah.
you're saying that there was a novelization of this. This isn't, it's fascinating because it feels like this type of movie is like the reverse, where there's a book first and then there's the movie. But it's, I love the designs and the concepts and everything of this movie. I can also
Oh,
see why
definitely.
this could be traumatizing to some kids because of like Hoggle is terrifying. If you look
Oh,
at
he
him.
is. I mean, and I was just watching. It's amazing to think of it from a technical standpoint. And then when you do see on that 1986 making of, so they had, I think her name was, I want to say Sherry Lewis, but that's Lamb Chop. It's Sherry Wise or somebody, I think. She was a little person. She was in the costume. The head was, and she could only see through the mouth. So that's why his mouth is open a lot. But Brian
Obviously.
Henson was off on the side, and he had a microphone and this thing that was like a mitt that was like radio controlled. And somebody else had another one. And then other people had like joysticks. There was like between 6 to 8 people controlling the face. Because the eyebrows move, everything, and the eyelids, and they had to rehearse forever. So, but he's terrifying because of that, because he looks so lifelike, and I'm sure he was terrifying at the time. Because that, I'm sure things, that sort of sophistication of like radio or animatronic puppetry had not been seen yet.
It's Sherry Weiser
That's what it
played
is. So I was
Hoggle.
almost there. I said Sherry Wise. I'm thinking of Janet Wise. I've still got Rocky Horror on the brain.
Well,
Sherry
and then
Weiser.
I
So.
imagine, like, on set when you film Hoggle or some of the other creatures that are clearly masks of so like helmet mask of that a person's wearing, you're just hearing all like the whirring noises and clicking sounds of just like the different, I'm gonna just say muscles, but that's not what it is really. It's like the mechanical muscles moving around that they then have to go back later to record the voice actor, Brian
It
Henson.
was really, it was really interesting too last night, because the 4K edition I have was the 35th anniversary, so that would have come out in 2020. And on the 4K, that was the first time they gave us any sort of deleted or alternate scenes. They say deleted, but all of the sequences, there's nothing that we don't see. But
Okay.
there's some alt. These are all from. It's funny that these are just on the 4K because they're from a VHS work print. You can tell. It's interesting to hear the voices. So of course it's just the performers, and later they would go in and ADR. But David Bowie's voice is really interesting too, and Jennifer Con. So they, the worm. They have the worm on there, and it's some really sweet female voice that behind the wall, saying all the lines that we know, but then of course they go in. So I was going somewhere with that because you mentioned something about voices or whatever, but
Well, yeah,
oh, I
because
guess it was just because they just had to do the lines while they're filming it, as you know. And Sarah, like when they had a, it's somewhat extended when David Bowie first, comes through the window, and her lines as we know them or as they're performed, audio wise at least, were very just sort of muted the way she said them in this like take that's just the audio from when they filmed it, and luckily they went back and she had more, kind of emotion with it, so, desperation or whatever. But yeah, I don't
it's
know what my point was with that. I'm sorry.
I'm just I even said this in the first chance. I would love to just go back and watch them film this because it's just so
Oh
interesting.
yeah.
Like coming up with the helping hands must have been so
Oh.
many production meetings. to like figure out how she's gonna fall and like the logistics of everything. And the I'm assuming they got dancers to do that, or maybe some fellow puppeteers to do
I
the
think it's
actual
mostly
hands.
puppeteers. Yeah, they show a little bit of that, as I remember. I need to really watch this. The documentary from the time is really, really interesting on it. So she was on wires, of course. They had just kind of the shaft, like she would be dropped through. But people, they made hundreds of these arms, basically. And so these performers are behind the walls. They can't see anything. Just like the guy who had to juggle the balls for David Bowie. He had a great time.
Oh, I knew that was not David Bowie. You can clearly tell that, like, Bowie's shoulder is one way and the arm is coming from a different angle. And you're
Yeah,
like, I don't know
that
how this will
guy.
work.
And they didn't, well, I guess they couldn't really give him any sort of monitor or whatever for him to see it. But you see this guy, which I would have gotten pissed. I mean, because it's frustrating because he can't see what he's doing. And then, so he would drop these, they had like a box of these crystal balls. And you see David like laughing about it, especially when he has to like throw it to Hoggle and it becomes a peach. And David talks about that in the documentary. He said, I had a great time. He said he was miserable, but I think David was trying to laugh to try to ease this guy's Michael, whatever his name is.
Aww.
But this, I mean, this guy, you see his face. He's like, look, and he's, but I think you're stuck behind, even if it's David Bowie, you're stuck behind this person. You can't see what the hell you're doing. If you keep dropping the ball, literally, and it's take after take after take after take. So, and you see him sweating, and it's, poor guy.
Oh, must have been a long day for him.
But I, to be crouched behind David Bowie,
In those tights.
I'd be dropping balls on purpose. Whoopsie.
Whoopsies.
No, I'm kidding. I mean, no, I'm not kidding. Because what is David Bowie? Especially in the 80s, he was, yeah. But, yeah, it's really interesting. But no, I was gonna say too. Again, you know me getting on going off on tangents. Those hands, it shows is all these puppeteers, and so you see them, they're like out in like an alleyway or whatever. They're at I think it's Elstree Studios in London. That's where they filmed everything too in the 80s for these fantasy movies. But all these performers, they're together, they had to, and so they all came up with different faces and then that they could use. But then you think they have to remember, like, okay, this is your hand. Like, there's one that kind of looks like a, I can't do it. Like, there's one that looks like a
Right,
snail.
like
And then they're
I'm
like the
my
eyes.
left hand is the right eye and my right hand is the jaw, the bottom jaw or
Yeah.
something. Like, yeah.
But
Like
it's like
how
multiple people had to get together. And I don't know if they were like lying. I don't know how that worked logistically to be up in that chute unless it was like scaffolding type levels and they're like on their, imagine like lying on your stomach and then having to do that. So people put in a lot of work and then trying to work with a baby and who they changed the name to Toby because his name was Toby. But you see it on there too, like they were having to use sock puppets and things because he loved the. Luckily, he wasn't scared of the Muppets or puppets that they used in this. But he wouldn't pay attention to David Bowie, and he'd be like, so they have to have a sock puppet on one. So, I mean, because he's a baby. And then they had chickens and real animals they're having to work with. So,
Which, watching this, I was just like, if this kid can remember, like, if this person, if Toby Froud, however you pronounce his
Proud,
last
yeah.
name,
Proud, yeah.
can remember, like, filming this, I would probably be like, it's terrifying. He must have, like, be a little shaken up.
He loved it apparently. And
And I'm
that's the
looking,
problem is he's not gonna remember though,
of course
because
not.
I've seen a photo of him recently and he's kind of what you would expect Toby to look like grown up. I think he remembers it was like he had a good time with it, but again, he's not gonna remember because he's so little.
And he
But
works in puppetry sculpting as
That's
well,
right, yeah.
which is interesting. You know, he gave
Yeah.
up the acting career to be like, I was inspired by the Jim Henson Corporation.
Hey, yeah. And then I was like, your guest that was on the previous episode of this, I'm glad he mentioned that museum in Atlanta because I'd forgotten about that. And I'm going to be in Atlanta at the beginning of September.
Take
You can see Spark.
pictures.
I'll try. I've had friends that go to that though, and they've taken pictures, so I don't know what the deal is, but I need to do that because I was going to try to spend the whole weekend. I'm seeing Sparks, of course, there Friday night, and then I was going to try to find
From
other things
Annette,
to do.
the guys who wrote Annette. Yeah.
Yep, my favorite band other than Bowie, but yeah.
Well, Bowie is an artist.
True.
He's.
And they're brothers.
And like, Bowie probably had a group of musicians that worked with him, but he wasn't like a band, right?
They were ever changing, yeah. And a lot of them would go away and then come back. It was just kind of based on whatever his sound was at the time, where he's going near the, I mean, so the latter part of his life, it was pretty much the same core band of that came to be associated with him, with Gale Ann Dorsey and Mike Garson and Earl Slick, Jerry Leonard, that whole kind of core group, and they were on the last two albums. But even the very last album, he was kind of secretly kind of experimenting with newer, jazzier, things. So he was just, that's the thing why he's always been interesting and why Sparks have always been interesting to me. They never stuck to the same sort of pattern. And they were never boring, really. So
Interesting.
even with Bowie and Sparks, the albums that I've got albums by both of them that I'm like, these are horrible, but there's still things, certain songs I love on there. I can see where they were coming from. You have to consider the time period that they were in. So, but just for a bad Bowie pun, I mean, he's just always going through ch-ch-ch-ch changes. So I had to, I'm sorry.
Is there
Even
anything
I'm
else
like
though you wanna?
groaning.
Is there anything else you want to talk about before we get
I
sharp and
think you
flat?
need to stop me while you can.
Great,
No, I think you need to
let's do it.
Sharp flat.
So in this section, we're going to highlight some moments whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp, and if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. And considering this is a second chance, we're going to see if John agrees with his former sharps and flats. So Tyler, the floor is yours. What do you go? Tell us your, yeah.
I didn't think about this before. I have to be honest, because I was listening to the first one right before. I said, oh shit, the sharps and flats. How did I forget?
You've been on this
So I don't
before.
have any. I
Well,
know. How many times have I
all right,
done this
ready?
now?
All right, ready? Do you have any flats?
I have to be honest, I really don't. I just think this is always enjoyable. And like I said, it is kind of a comfort movie for me. It's perfect. It's not too long. It's the perfect, length of a film. The songs, you can't help it. They are catchy. I don't have any flats for this.
All right, what about sharps? You could say the whole movie if you want. It sounds like you
Well,
want to
I
say
mean, in a
that.
way, I think I was, th yeah, I was thinking of that right before I logged into this Zoom meeting. The movie, but I think the biggest sharp for me is just. And again, thinking about the Inside the Labyrinth documentary that went along with it, knowing and seeing how much work went into this in every aspect of it. Definitely the creatures that were being made, from these designs that had never been made before, and the commitment of everybody when things were very frustrating, like when they couldn't figure out how to get the Fireys to be able to take off body parts and then eventually they were like black velvet. I mean, that was weeks and weeks. So it was a lot of, this movie was a lot of trial and error. And it's a lot of, and it's all practical effects, pretty much. I still don't know how they did the MC Escher stairs. I know, I mean, it's a double that they had on some sort of rig, like when he comes up from below.
Love that.
And,
That's amazing.
but how did they do? I mean,
The power of
but that was a
editing.
set. Yeah. No, but it was a set that was built. So
No,
you've
but I mean,
got
like
these stairs going everywhere. Yeah.
there was a moment where like Toby was sitting on a platform and Jennifer Connelly is like upside down or something, but not really because her hair is not showing that she's upside down. I think that's more
Oh, well,
like
yeah. I
editing.
mean, stuff like that.
But like
There's a moment.
the Jareth moment that you were just talking about, I have no idea how they did that.
They show a little bit of it again in this documentary. I keep referencing it, but that's how I know that how all this stuff was done was, I mean, it's obviously a double. They had his feet, I think, locked in to the bottom of it, so he's hanging upside down, and you see some sort of lever, or not a lever, I don't know how to describe it, but anyway, this guy, and he's supported, but there's also a moment where, and it the, his double, you see it for a split second. It's a close up of Bowie. It's like he jumps down and then he comes in sideways immediately. If you look really closely, you see it cut, you know, where it cuts to the double, and then Bowie's coming in, of course. So things like that. I mean, and I was noticing obviously more wires and things, especially on the 4K.
Oh,
Oh,
of
and one thing
course.
I looked up, I noticed the mic was visible when they're on the ledge right before they fall, right on the outskirts of the Bog of Eternal Stench. Because I was like, what the hell is that? I've never seen it before. And I looked up on IMDb, and it's a microphone that's visible.
Oh,
So
shit.
it shows its age, but again, just think of like
Yeah, like the green
all
screen
the
of it
work.
all.
Yeah, the work that was put into it. That
Yeah.
owl at the very beginning, I think that was the first CGI or the first like
Animal.
realistic animal character that was ever done in a movie. So, I mean, there's a lot of firsts in this movie. So I think the whole movie is a shark. Yeah.
So, do I agree with my former sharps and flats? I agree with my former sharps. I would like to amend that whole rant I went on about her vest. It didn't bother me this
Yeah.
time around. You
Yeah.
know?
It's the, it's 80s.
Although part of me was just like, who would wear that kind of blousy pirate shirt? And then I remembered, oh, right, it's the 80s. So
The
it
80s, so yeah.
happens. But I do have a new flat, and it has nothing to do with the movie. I'm flatting Prime because they like to add commercials in the middle of shit right now.
Why are
So
they doing that?
for more money, for
That was the
another
problem you had
tier.
with the Apple. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I'm not
And I'm
paying
like,
extra money for Prime, so figure your shit out. Especially if you're like renting or buying the movie, like, well, no, when you're renting or buying a
yeah.
movie, when you rent a movie, they don't have it. But when you buy it, because I think I had
Okay.
to buy this one, some point they with like an update or something, they add a commercial. And I'm just like, you're adding 3 minutes to this movie that like you're making my momentum dip.
If you've
So,
had to buy it, you should definitely not have commercials in it. I mean, that's
right?
ridiculous.
Anyway,
That's
so
stupid.
I also have new sharps that we kind of talked about, but I didn't actually like give it its due as a sharp. So I would like to sharp the set decoration in her room because, like I said, it tells you this what's going to happen. And I know I'm not the first person to say this, but like if you're like exposed to this for the first time, you're gonna miss it. It's kind of like the
Yeah.
Sixth Sense where you have to re now rewatch it and figure out when Bruce Willis is like, if find out that he's dead and all that and everything.
Yeah.
And I also would like to
Oh,
just sharp the Jim Henson Creature Shop because a lot of these,
yeah.
though terrifying, but like the designs are very original, very
Yeah.
different. Like in the Goblin City battle, I'm assuming that's what it where they are at the end, towards the end.
Yeah.
There were like those people that were like on like ostriches or ostrich looking things. And at first I thought
Oh
it was
yeah.
like a one costume piece, which probably it is at some point, but like when those like jousters fall off the ostriches, you see that it's two bodies. So it's very
Yeah,
interesting.
that's when it changes to that. Yeah, because it's one
Yeah.
guy or whomever in the suit. Their legs are the creature's legs, whatever it is. They're in the head. But of course they have, you know, so that, but that's just again the whole Muppets thing is where they had to figure out, I mean, with Muppets, you know, it's all about camera angles. They had to literally set up these shots, and even for something that's just gonna like, you know,
And it
fly
seems
by at dinner
like
time.
the films I've seen from, especially the 80s of Jim Henson, they like to push themselves. They're not relying on
Yeah.
like their Sesame Street, arm
Yeah.
above your head Muppets. Like they're figuring out different things, like in
Oh, yeah.
Muppet Christmas Carol where Kermit is walking. Like they had to
Oh, yeah.
figure that out, So like with this being a whole different facet of their imaginations and everything, like they were able to go a little darker, go a little
Yeah.
creepier, a little more
Well, just think,
fantastical.
Yeah, and just think of Little Shop of Horrors that came out the same year as this. Was they because they created Audrey too, and that was a
That's
huge
right.
endeavor, and that was a huge. I mean, because Frank Oz directed that one, Little
So cool.
Shop.
Yeah. He's
So
in this
they
as
were,
well.
yeah. He's the wise man, I think, and he's done some other.
Yeah.
Oh, that was what was so weird too on rewatching the extended alternate scenes last night. Sir Didymus obviously was Dave Goles because his voice on just the work print is Gonzo. So imagine Sir Didymus and all his lines are Gonzo.
Huh.
Because I know that's Dave Goles. Because he's like, "Oh, my fair maiden." And I was like, okay, that's Gonzo.
I'm
Yeah.
seeing two people credited for him. So there's Dave
Well, somebody
Goles.
else was the voice for sure.
No, Dave Goles is still credited as the voice, but
Really?
David Shaughnessy is also credited as the voice. So not sure
It's
who
got to be
actually
David
did it.
Shaughnessy, yeah, because it's totally Dave Goles.
Unless they're crediting Dave Goles for because he did it while they were filming. So,
I think that's what it was, because he was actually puppeteering it.
yeah.
But I was like, which amazed, I was like, that's Gonzo, but then I was like, oh, that's him, And then I think they re-recorded the voice, so which was more suited to that character.
Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist? I think I still just say Magic Dance.
Yeah.
And As the World Falls Down. Because those
Yeah,
are
Magic Dance is fun.
those are, to me, my rudimentary knowledge of David Bowie's discography. Those are very Bowie.
Oh yeah. Magic
So.
Dance, it's fun. It's definitely not my favorite Bowie song.
Right, but out of the six that are the five that are in this movie.
That I would add, I mean, I think though, I was about to say is I think As the World Falls Down is one of the most beautiful things he ever wrote. I mean, I think that one pops up on my music all the time. And Underground, I really love that song. And I love the
Oh,
video
yeah.
for it. It's a really fun video that has Hoggle and a lot of the creatures back, but it's just Bowie. And
Like it's a music video, not clips from the movie.
yeah, they had a music video. They did a music video for that and for As the World Falls Down, which As the World Falls Down was never actually released as a single, but Underground and Magic Dance were.
But I'm sure you ripped
Yeah.
it from the
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
movie.
No, but see, on the Best of Bowie DVD that's now long out of print and they need to remaster it anyway. That's when I first saw the two music videos. For so Underground and As the World, actually, As the World Falls Down may not have even been, that video may not have even been released till about 93 when the first like VHS Bowie video collection came out. It's really neat. He looks odd. It's like really, it's black and white. It's very like hazy. And Hoggle's still with him, but he's like in a suit and he's in this black and white. And it shows clips from the movie in black and white. Underground's more interesting to me. He starts out like he's performing with his band in some like dingy like dive bar, and it's all blue. He's going through an alleyway. He sees the junk lady. He sees Hoggle, and then he becomes like this animated thing. But Underground's very upbeat. I think it's a really, really great way to end the movie too on the end credits, and I love that kind of gospel choir
Well, doesn't it
that's with him.
also, isn't it also the beginning of the movie during the
It
opening
is,
credits?
yeah. Yeah, they've got
Okay.
it's really interesting. Those first few notes, the doon 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 doon, is actually he directly ripped from his earlier one of the only good things about the Tonight album, Loving the Alien. That's the beginning of that song. That's from 1984. And so but it's a lot of the themes and the score that you'll hear, and then there's a little bit of Underground, and then it plays for a little bit when she's running home in the rain. And other than that, we don't hear the full thing or what's most of the full thing till the end credits. Yeah.
And on that note, Tyler, we're done with the episode. We did the second chance of
I'm glad it went fairly
Labyrinth.
well. I hope it went fairly well. Like I said, I felt like I wasn't as prepared for this, but
You sounded great.
maybe that's
You
me. I don't know.
that's on you, boo. But what do you
And I can talk
have?
about anything.
But what do you have to plug or promote?
Well, by the time this episode comes out, I think the show that I'm in rehearsals for right now will have already happened.
No, because this comes
Are
out
you
next
sure?
week.
Oh, this comes out next week?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So then people have at least 1 week, if they're in Nashville, to come get tickets to see me in my 1 weekend run of Jesus Christ Superstar, my favorite show of all time. So I'm playing pilot, and that's the last weekend of July.
I thought that happened already. I'm glad I caught you then right before.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said, because I didn't think this would be out to, like I said, we're just doing it. We only got 1 weekend, and I was afraid because I knew you were going to ask me that, and I thought, well, this won't be out before then. So hey, yeah, so
No.
July 25th through the 26th in Nashville, and then if they want to see more details, Tyler Henry Actor at in, on Instagram is the best way to follow me.
And if you don't get a chance to see it, like some host of this show probably won't be able to see it because I live in a different state and everything. Hopefully Tyler will add like videos or something or photo
I think
behind the scene
Tyler,
pictures in his costumes or
yeah.
whatever.
Oh, Tyler will be getting access to these. Yeah, we've already talked to the director about that because I have many friends, out of state and everything that are definitely gonna want to see that. And I've been really excited. It was the second choice of the part I wanted, pilot, but it's really,
Because you wanted to
I've
play
really grown
Mary,
to love
right?
it.
You really wanted to play
Clearly, I
Mary.
did.
Yeah.
No, Judas is my number one, but
Just hearing
no.
you with
Yeah.
your bass voice, I don't know how to laugh.
Oh, yeah. That wouldn't cause people to walk out. But yeah. Or it
Well,
might not. Who knows? It depends on who shows up. Yeah. My family, maybe, but yeah.
who knows?
Yeah.
And if you
Yeah.
want to talk more about Labyrinth, or if you have any like insider information about this proposed sequel that may or may not actually happen, I'd love to hear about it. You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube at buttersongpod. Yeah, I don't really have any other questions to the audience. And if you want to be part of the next episode's conversation, well, we will be discussing romance and cigarettes.
I'm completely unfamiliar with that. I have never heard of that in my life.
Apparently, it's an all-star cast. And by apparently, I mean it is an all-star cast. We, as
Oh,
of this recording,
cigarettes.
haven't recorded it yet, so I'm kind of intrigued.
I have never heard about that. I'm gonna have to look that up.
Yep, this guest picked it and I like pitched it to me, and I just went, let's do it. Let's go.
Oh, 2005. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. James Gandolfini, Susan Sarandon. Yeah.
Yep. Well, Tyler, thank you so much for coming back on the pod.
Yeah.
And break a leg with
Thank you.
Jesus Christ Superstar.
Thank you. Very, very excited.
And everyone, thank you for listening, and bye for now.
Special thanks to Aaron Choi for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.